Computer World
with Sandra and Noah.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Computer World podcast. My name's Noah Bender.
And I'm Sandra Nemchik.
And this week, our guests are sisters, actors, and composers whose newest original work, Jinx, the musical, which they wrote for their alma mater, Burrell Middle School, will premiere this coming March in San Mateo, California. Please welcome Tegan and McKenna Reynolds.
Woo!
Yay!
Hey.
Thanks for coming, guys. You're both on like two different time zones.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So McKenna, you're in California. Tegan, you're in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, Tegan, you're in college. McKenna, you're just out of college, and you're producing this new musical for your middle school. How did this come about?
So the director at drama, Alyssa Goldrath, we knew her, we met up with her.
Right.
And she actually came out and saw Emily Dickinson. So she
we'll talk about that too.
She saw Emily Dickinson and she was like, wow, okay, this is super cool. You can write a musical that's, you know, not too shabby.
But I just realized also there's a part of this story that I don't even know if you know, McKenna.
Oh.
Then you take
secret
it away.
Part.
Then you go.
I just remember, so if Emily had happened in October.
Mm-hmm. Of last year.
Yeah, JT and I were in California. JT, my co-composer. We're home in California and we were playing these songs for another musical we had written for my mom because she hadn't heard any of them yet. And she had suggested, because she knew that, you know, like it's hard finding shows for schools to do.
Oh, 100%.
Like high school, even high school is hard. In high school, there's still a broader range.
There's still about like 20 to choose from.
Unless it's Changing Minds, just keep doing that, you know, keep doing Changing Minds over and over.
So Alyssa, I know Alyssa, the director at Burrell, was really tired of these Disney stories and these typical things that everyone's doing. And so she was kind of not finding anything she was liking. And so my mom was hearing us do this and she was like, have y'all ever considered, like, what if you wrote a musical for Alyssa? And we were like, I don't know, like I just don't even know when we would have the time. But she was like, come on, just like think about it. And so that was like, those were the first murmurings, like the first whisperings of like there being a possibility. And then I think it became something that I think that Miss G, the director, was like, oh, this is something that could be really possible. And then McKenna, I don't know if you have more of the story.
I think it, from there, sort of the idea of like coming up with a commissioning a work for Burrell Drama sort of like started from this like little like, from our mom. And then it sort of became like well, you've written Emily, right? I've seen it. It was successful. And so there was that trust there of like, okay, no, you can do this in a short amount of time, because we wrote Emily in 3 months.
That's really quick.
Yeah. So it was like, this also had to have a quick turnaround. So it kind of just was the perfect, you know, I guess we were the perfect team to do that, to have that quick turnaround. And then waiting for the right idea, because if, you know, we brainstormed a lot of ideas. If we didn't come up with the, you know, the right idea, then it was like, well, we'll just do another show. And we sort of came up with Jinx. One day I was like in the parking lot at like the ice rink at my school. And I was like, okay, here's some ideas I have for shows. Here's some ideas that we've been brainstorming. And I just kind of went down the list. And then I was like, you know, what about Jinx?
Yeah. Tell us the premise. Yeah. 'Cause it seems like your goal was to write a middle school story that feels actually authentic to 12 and 13 year olds.
And featuring a lot of like singing and solos for other people, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, sort of, I am very, very passionate about like creating musicals for, specifically that like feature like women and, you know, have the potential to feature non-binary people. Just because there's not a lot of that specifically, like within the narrative, like not being revolved around like relationship, like revolving around relationships and,
and what, you don't want to make two middle schoolers kiss awkwardly?
Yeah, what? Just like didn't, you know, for some reason. Yeah. I mean,
because 13 is a great musical, but that's just all about the popular boy and girl getting together in the end.
It's all about the tongue, which like we can dive into that.
What? That was not my middle school experience.
I know. I like don't think I don't think I kissed with tongue until like college. Like I just whatever, but that's like a whole other thing. But
love 13 though. Not
no disclosure here.
No, I'm a 13 stan. But
hey, me too. This is a 13 safe space.
We love 13.
And we don't have to talk about the movie.
No,
that's not a real thing.
The Deborah Messing starring movie.
You mean 12?
Yeah, 12. But
starring 20-year-olds.
All of that aside, I, you know, was passionate about that, and then also like, you know, I like characters who are messy. That's like my sort of goal, specifically like female characters who are messy, because I feel like a lot of things in musical, it's like I sing and dance and everything is perfectly crafted into a song and like I can say and express how I feel. And I think middle school is like the perfect age where like people don't know how to express their own emotions. People are like, you know, trying to figure out who they are, even, you know, they're fresh out of elementary school. So I thought that it was
don't yet know what you're not ready for yet.
Yeah.
We actually had the chance, and you know, there will be a documentary coming out. Ooh. That was produced by Melissa Goldrath and Wendy Sims and Jeannie Barrett. But we had the chance to interview the middle schoolers that were about to graduate last year and talk to them about like issues and things that were relevant in their lives and things that they want to see. And so that actually was a lot of what we based the musical.
So it's like Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Chorus Line for middle schoolers.
Exactly.
And so there are definitely, although like obviously we're trying to create something different, there's still a lot of, you know, cliches involved just because there are some themes that run through middle school that just always run through middle school, you know? And
is there a vaping song? No, I'm just kidding.
A huge through line of the plot is popularity, mm-hmm. and is like, you know, we live in a day and age where like school is getting more competitive and college is getting more competitive. People are starting to prepare for that so young, and people are pinning all their hopes and dreams on certain things going right in their lives. And so that is definitely a huge aspect of our story. But really, our story revolves around these two characters who are each, they think they care about different things. Like, they think they aren't invested in popularity, but then they sort of end up being roped in, and they let it sort of bring them down in a sense.
Because that's the time when it feels like popularity matters the most.
Oh,
yeah. Or it feels like it matters the most.
It does. Mm-hmm. We've talked about how it was so interesting coming back like as a college student and hearing all these kids talk about their social circles and how it's when they're talking about it, it sounds like life or death. But then when you, when you're out of it and you're looking from the outside, like,
whatever.
Like you're like, I don't remember, like I don't care about anything that happened.
Yeah,
to me
once you're past it.
Right. Yeah. And so it's, you know, we definitely wanted to try and capture that. I don't know how much more in depth we want to go. I don't know, McKenna, if there's anything specifically in the plot that you would like to share, but
talking about popularity, which is this like super ridiculous thing from the outside looking in, and then pairing it with like a super normal paranormal thing such as a jinx, I think it sort of brings out
like a curse.
Like a curse. So I guess I'll explain, say what Jinx is about. It's about these two girls. Well, it sort of follows Devin, who is a, you know, overachieving, straight A's, extracurricular middle school student who is already thinking about college. She wants to go to Stanford. That's her way out. You know, she, you know, watches all those movies and she's like, I want to go to Stanford. That's my goal. Blah, 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 blah. And so in order to become, you know, pad her resume, she wants to become class president. However, being class president,
she has a whole checklist
of things she wants to do. And one of them is becoming class president. However, becoming class president, as we all know, is a popularity contest. And Devin is by no means popular. She is likable, but she is not popular.
And as we know, being popular doesn't always mean that you're liked.
And so basically Christina, the most popular girl in school,
a popular name too.
Yeah, popular name. She is the captain of the soccer team. Ooh. She's having her big birthday party coming up, and Devin decides that she is going to get an invite to this party, whether that's by trying out getting on the soccer team or trying to bribe people to get her into the party. But she ends up meeting Christina's younger sister, JC, who is an activist. She doesn't care about popularity. She doesn't care about anything. All she wants to do is save the turtles and end climate change. A very Greta Thunberg,
yes.
Thunberg type. And her best friend, Nolan, who is a mystical, lore-loving, I would say thrill-seeking, but maybe not. just very kooky. And he's friends with JC sort of by default. They're both the outcasts, so they're friends. And basically, Devin, when she finds out that JC is Christina's sister, she decides to befriend JC and sort of lie about also caring about climate change and wanting to save the turtles to try and get an invite to this party. And throughout sort of a science project presentation about saving the turtles, they accidentally jinx each other. And JC gets plagued with immense, immense good luck, and Devin gets plagued with bad luck, and everything that Devin aspires to do, JC gets. So JC gets, you know, becomes popular, gets an invite, all of these things, and then sort of seeing how Devin, who is somebody who all she wants is to go to college and become class president, seeing her views and needs and wants shift when sort of put in the center of this popularity vortex, and seeing JC struggle with upholding sort of all of her values.
She's feeling major imposter syndrome as well, mm-hmm. because when you're a person who, like, good things don't normally happen to, and then good things happen to you, you're like, I mean, even if you are a person normally good things happen to, you're always asking, like, why, like, I don't deserve this. Why me? You know?
Right.
It's hard to
do that. Yeah.
Then also throughout this all, Nolan is really urging them to see, you know, he's a really, like, this dark magic believer, and he's really urging them to see the urgency of this and how they have to pay attention to the jinx and what the jinx wants.
It's like learning the hard way what really matters in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
And so both of them kind of get caught up in this obsession with making things go the way they want and go perfectly instead of writing out whatever is meant to be.
Your own story.
Yeah.
On a quest to find your inner self.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well,
how was the shift between, like, you know, writing it and singing it yourself to, you know, hearing middle school voices on it?
It's so wild and so cool. I think the most exciting part is when you're hearing other people mm-hmm. sing something that you've created. It's just unreal. Especially since I'm singing these songs, like, imagining younger voices, but mm-hmm. you know, here I sound like a 40-year-old man, you know, with my alto voice here. And, you know, I'm doing all these riffs and I'm like, you know, I don't know. You just hope it works. You do it, you cross your fingers, you hope it works. And so when these kids sing it and they're really like bringing themselves to it. And they also just sound so cute. Like, it's just everything. It's, you couldn't, there's nothing more you could wish for. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly gratifying.
Yeah, and the time I remember, it was like a week before auditions and callbacks. Sorry. And my friend was at a masterclass because like Moulin Rouge was touring and they were doing a masterclass for, you know, auditioning for young kids. And my friend went and recorded audio. Somebody had brought in a song from Jinx.
Oh.
Like one of the kids who was going to audition.
That's so cool.
And I remember sending it to Tegan and JT and being like, oh my gosh, we've made it.
Our song in the masterclass.
Like it's just so cool because, you know, the way that I obsess and we obsess over musicals and media and stuff, seeing these kids, you know, even kids from like other middle schools, you know, DMing me or like reaching out or, you know, posting about Jinx and like being excited about it is so cool. And, you know, you feel like a little mini celebrity, but it's just cool to see that even, you know, with people not knowing the full story yet, just the music really resonates. And that's all because of, you know, Tegan and JT.
I think that's what was so cool about auditions. I couldn't be there for those, but I got to see clips and things and hear these kids singing the song. And it's so cool, like how little these kids knew about the show. And they really came in giving it their all for these characters. And I think that was so like magical to see. And it's so, when you care so much about something, it's really nice when other people coming on board care as much about it, you know?
Yeah, I assume it takes you back to, you know, how much you cared about auditioning for the middle school musical in sixth and seventh and eighth grade as well, because, you know, it's a huge deal when you're in it, when you're part of it.
Yeah.
And I bet this is like something that they'll never forget too, because like you're writing this for them and this is like, they're part of this process. And it's just like, maybe they'll want to do musical theater later on in life.
Yeah, and I hope so. And I will say like I didn't get the opportunity to do a new musical or be a part of a new musical until college. And it's a huge thing that happens at Penn State that like, we're really lucky. We like commission writers and it's really awesome. And so the fact that like we get to create that opportunity for these middle schoolers is so exciting. And I'm like, I'm honestly a little envious because it is so like, I love new work. I think it's the most exciting. And yeah, I just think it's really cool that we get to do this.
Has there been anything that you've like changed because a middle schooler has done something that you were like, whoa, hang on a second, I didn't see that?
No, because I...
Don't accept any critique at all.
Well, we did kind of talk about prior to the show that it would mostly be Frozen just because of the status of the fact the fact that JT and I are like in college still and so that is something we had talked about, but I don't know.
I was there, so when the show was we did a reading with high school students before over the summer, and that was super helpful because it wasn't a middle school voice, but it was like hearing younger people and just hearing other, sorry, that was my antidepressant alarm. I'll take that in a second. So we had to hear these people read it. And so sort of immediately as it's reading, me, Tegan, and JT are like, this has got to go. We got to change this, blah, 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 blah. So by the time that auditions came around for the actual show, we had already heard people on the piece and sort of knew like, okay, this is whatever, you know. We did, after the show was cast, we did a read through and I made edits based off that read through. But a lot of the people that were cast like fit their roles. Like this cast is like perfect. They fit their roles so well. And they're so, the guy who's playing Ryan. Oh God, he's literally, he walked in and I was like, do you guys see this? Because these characters have all been in my brain.
But were you part of the casting process?
Yeah, I was a part of the casting process. I was in the room and I just, you know, just for like guidance and stuff, and you know, people would come in and I'd be like, you can do whatever you want, but this person is like embodying this role, because
non-negotiable.
Yeah, I was like, this person, because I really am passionate about like sort of writing characters that have an essence opposed to like a type, or you know, so like the essence would be like they just need to be like, you know, like sassy, or as like the essence, or like they need to have like an edge to them or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because you know, Tegan and I both can have an edge to us, but we're very different people, very different actors, you know. And so that was like a thing when people were coming in, it was like, this person is great and could do it, but like they need an edge, or this person is so great because they understand comedic timing and they're like super funny, or this person is just a super genuine, and that's like
that person has to be undeniably so likable.
Yeah.
I'm only interested in perfect. I'll never settle for just fine. If I focus on a doubt and I pause to let it out, I will be decades behind. And so I bind myself to blueprints. One miss could make it all a waste of time. Cause with all the possibilities, it's my responsibility to keep my dreams in sight and only do it right, to soar when others fly. Speaking off the top of my mind.
Tell us about the Emily Dickinson musical. Was that the first full project you guys wrote together?
Yeah, that was our baby.
But your senior project, McKenna?
So there was a student, there's a student production organization on our campus called Open Door. You know, it was like, if you want to direct a show in the black box, you know, submit, you know, it can be a new work. Yeah, like a pitch. And so I love directing. That's what I want to do.
She, by the way, is supposed to pitch things that are written. And she pitched something that we had not written.
No, which, no.
So like, let's do it.
So iconic. No, like in a great yeah. way. Like,
well, they had said like,
so iconic.
They were like, you can pitch something you haven't written, or like just pitch anything and we'll see if we choose it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I really want to direct. If I pitch a show like that already exists, we'd have to budget for rights. And like, I don't want to do that. So like, let me just write let's just write a show. And so I like pitched, I had pitched this show, Emily Dickinson. And I was like, look, I'm going to have my sister write it and JT write it. I like lied and said I had like a full production team ready for it. And like, I like created this full fake plot. I hadn't done any research on the show like at all yet. And I was like, yeah. And like the black box is a perfect space. Like, you know, it's going to be a queer show and it's going to focus on women. And I think that this is like perfect for the U and perfect for Utah. And they were like, okay, great.
And I hadn't even like fully agreed. You know,
you were like, you didn't even know she was pitching this, I bet.
No, right. I was like, mate, like, cause we had talked about writing something together before. Like we had started another musical before and started writing like one song. And had started, you know, conceptualizing it, but then it just never happened. And so when this was happening, I was like, this isn't actually going to happen. Like, when do I have time? When do we have time? Like, what are we going to, you know?
Also, I pitched this in May and the show had to be done at the end of July.
Damn.
So
yikes.
Said, never written a musical before.
Never written a musical before, but
yeah,
I was
like, great idea. That's gonna go so great. And so, it did.
You just needed like a frantic push, right?
Yeah. Literally, I wrote act one and we did a read through without playing the music. And the original plot of the show was Lavinia, Mabel, and Sue. And Emily had already passed away and it was going through Emily's life.
Like Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, but it was going through Emily's life like as a ghost and her watching post her life and like kind of like Christmas Carol-esque, but like, and we did a read through.
Her being upset because the whole point is that she didn't want to be
she didn't want to be on her
fans. She didn't want her poems to be published. And so like her, how would she feel about that kind of a thing? Mm.
So it was going back and forth between past and present, and we did an act one read through. And it was like, we were like, okay. And then finally I was like, okay, I need to like do some more research. And I found this book called Our Lives Like Loaded Guns. I was already basing everything off of Open Me Carefully, which is like the gay Emily Dickinson book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lives Like Loaded Guns, I got it. And I was like, okay, like give me something. And in it was all about, if you haven't seen the show Emily Dickinson, this is a big spoiler, but it was all about this woman named Mabel Loomis Todd who published Emily's poems, and about an affair that she had with Emily Dickinson's brother that completely shook the entire family. And basically after Emily passed away, she like convinced him to give her the poems, and Mabel published the poems and wrote out Emily's lover, wrote out like her family from the poems, and basically like completely changed her narrative as like a revenge sort of thing, because Emily was dating this woman, sort of romantically involved with this woman named Sue. Sue ends up marrying Austin, Emily's brother. They're not happy because Sue is gay. And then Austin cheats on her with Mabel.
Oh.
There's a lot going on there.
So there's a lot going on with this family. And then, you know, so it became more interesting. And so we ended up following sort of that arc, and sort of it turned into this beautiful queer story that we wanted, about, you know, these people who just were trying to figure out life at a time where, you know, not that queerness wasn't allowed, but like being gay just wasn't really talked about. And it sort of was like, oh, they're just like really close friends. They're like sisters.
They're spinsters.
Of course.
Yeah. And the show ended up having like a lot of plot twists. Like, again, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to watch Emily ever in your life and not have it be spoiled.
Maybe don't spoil it.
Well, just there's, you know.
We'll just like put like a spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But like at the end of act one, you know, there's a big shock where, you know, Sue gets engaged to Austin after telling Emily that she's never going to get married and she's going to, you know, be a spinster forever. And then act two, all of a sudden, in the middle of act two, you're introduced to Mabel, who gets three songs, and literally within the span of these three songs, you don't see her the entire show. Within the span of these three songs, she completely disrupts and ruins the lives of every single member of the Dickinson family.
That sounds like such a great character.
And then you hate her, and then you love her, and then you...
Yeah, no, she's the best character in the show. And then she dips out, and then...
the princess track.
Yeah. And then Emily and Sue, you know, have their thing. And Emily, Sue realizes that she was wrong. She messed up. Emily dies. And then Mabel's like, let me spin this to make this about me. And then Mabel publishes Emily's poems completely right out of the story. All of these poems that are about Sue, people are like reading them now and they're like, oh, it's about God.
Oh, right.
Oh, it's about, you know, this, when in reality, it's about her gay love, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of funny and super meta, because here we are creating a story about who we perceive Emily Dickinson to be. But I think we acknowledge that almost within the piece, that we're aware we're doing that. But it's funny we're doing that, because the whole piece is about how Emily Dickinson is perceived and how other people have portrayed her in ways that aren't necessarily true to her.
And because she literally did not want her poems to be published.
Yeah, she was so committed to privacy.
Yeah. And like everyone, I mean, her poems paint her as this dark, mystical person, but that's because that's who Mabel and all these other people interpreted her as. They interpreted it her, because all they knew of her was the time of her life where she was shut inside her room and sick and, you know, didn't go anywhere. Like that's all they knew of her. And the reality is, and if you really look into her poems and really look at it, is that the only reason she seems so obsessed with death is because she's so obsessed with life. And she's so obsessed I know. And she's so obsessed with the beauty of everything. And she loved, you know, I don't know. She just loved the world and she wanted to get out of whatever, like, you know, that's what drove her. And she was just a really passionate person. At least that's how we see her. But yeah, the story evolved from how does Emily feel about her works being published after she passed to, gosh, what happens when someone's story gets put in the wrong hands or in mm-hmm. different people's hands?
And I'm sure it happens more than like what happened here with her. I'm sure there's other people right. that have yeah. things published that they don't want to be published.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it makes...
I was going to say, these were like diary entries.
Yeah.
Like yeah. imagine your diary, like your deepest, darkest thoughts and things get published. Like, yeah, she wrote them like very eloquently in like these poems and stuff. But girl was like writing about like very personal things. And then they yeah. got published and like rewritten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I think it definitely got, I feel like it really had the audience hopefully thinking about how they interpret anything they see, you know, mm-hmm. just taking everything with a grain of salt and giving everyone the room, like understanding that people are multidimensional and that just because you have one interpretation of something that happened in history or that happened with someone, there's so much more that, you know, we don't always see, which I think we know, but sometimes we forget, you know?
Yeah. And you can't truly know someone until they're gone.
Exactly. And yeah, I just hope I hope we did Emily proud. Sometimes I feel like we could.
You're going to go read it to her grave. You're going to go like bring some stuff to her.
No, I know. Yeah. I had a lot of like anxiety in writing the show because I was like, if Emily's ghost were to haunt me, like I hope she wouldn't be pissed off,
you know? I think you would know exactly, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't know,
I feel like we could feel like with the like ferocity that we were writing, I felt at times like her force was like through us, like
God, she just was like holding on to my
you were like this
yeah
just guiding my hand
felt, yeah. I think the reason we were able to like complete this and for it to be so good in such a short amount of time is like I think it is really so easy to make art when you are really passionate about something, when you really feel something. And I think we really felt and we connected to a lot of characters in the story. And so it was just so easy to, you know, try to create a voice for them because we felt like they created voices for us without even knowing it, you know?
Yeah, it seemed like a real passion project for you guys as it was, you know, taking shape.
Yeah. And we're excited hopefully for some future endeavors with it as well.
Somewhere local, maybe?
We don't know.
Mm. Pitch it to Bowditch. It'll be another middle school.
Oh, show. Yes, perfect.
Just like let the middle schools. I mean, yeah, if they're okay with it being gay.
Gay.
Probably Nueva. I feel like Nueva would be like super chill about that.
Oh my god, they would love it. They'd be like, right? Yes, more.
We've no obligation to sympathize, to bat our eyes at their bow ties, a curtsy as we say goodbye. Oh, what a cosmic waste of life to be owned for all eternity. That would be the death of me. The next bachelor who begs for a taste will spit in his eye.
All right, well, should we move on to our theater world lightning round?
Lightning round.
All right, so this is our theater world lightning round. We're just going to ask you some quick fire questions, boop, boop, boom, and just want your, you know, your opinion and various whatnots. Tegan and McKenna, who is your favorite Broadway diva?
Oh, Stephanie J. Block.
You're in good company.
Not Sutton Foster? What?
Also Sutton Foster. Also
gosh.
Stephanie J. Block, Sutton Foster.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, she's becoming a Broadway diva. Sarah Bareilles.
Oh,
I think she's there.
For sure.
I think she's there.
McKenna?
Patti LuPone. Patti LuPone, classic, just because she left Equity. And I think that's a badass move.
Yes, her face is on the trophy of Broadway Divas.
Right. But also there's some controversy there because there are some people who like need equity and she doesn't. And anyway,
I don't know. I think she is like the epitome of Broadway diva. But someone that I like Stephanie J. Block too. I think she's cool.
I mean, Bernadette Peters, come on.
Bernadette Peters, the OG witch.
Yeah.
Let's see. What are your dream roles?
I mean, this is so like silly, but I would love to play Emily in the musical.
Well, hey, you've already done Annie, so what else is that to
exactly?
Do? I know. Sorry, not to plug our show again, but I really wanted to. We really were passionate about writing a role that we would want to play, and Emily is a role I'd love to play.
Yeah. If you want, I'll direct it so you can play it.
Oh my gosh, please!
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
The thing that people, not to bring it back to Emily, but the thing people really said about the show is that they saw female roles in a different light. Because they were so full and so multidimensional.
Mm-hmm. And they were written by females. Hello. Yeah. I think that's the important thing.
That needs to be done more. But it's like when you see a role like that, you're like, oh, I don't want to play these other female roles again. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, like, you know, so. I don't know. Anyway, I'd want to play Mabel and Emily Dickinson. But also, I'd want to do anything in Great Comet, literally anything.
Oh, my God.
On an accordion and I'll run around like I don't even care. But Sonia also probably.
I was gonna say I'm waiting to age up to Mrs. Lovett.
Amazing.
Yeah, in 20 years you got it.
Yeah. I want to do that.
Yeah. Would love to do Baker's Wife one day. Would love to do Witch one day. Love that show. Would love to do.
I thought you meant the Baker's Wife the musical.
The greatest musical. Either one.
I love Sondheim. Maybe like Dot and Sunday. Maybe like I don't know. I also love new works. Any new work role, dream role, you know?
The best role for me hasn't been written yet.
Literally.
She'll write it herself.
I love new works.
Is there a song or a moment or a certain show that never fails to always make you cry?
Oh my gosh. It doesn't make me cry, but it gives me chills. And I watched the part of the bootleg, like religiously, is Groundhog Day, the musical.
Interesting.
Wow.
Underrated. Kinchy. But it's the end of act one. And the music, the piano part, and just, when I saw the show live, I literally was like jaw on the floor. I was sobbing because just directorially, it was so beautiful. And I was so jealous that I didn't direct it myself or like come up with that. But he goes through the day over and over and over again. And then at the end of act one, they do the whole thing in reverse on this like turntable. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, what? And just something about the music. It just,
song was it?
One day, just the end of one day where they're like,
oh yeah. That's about fun, right?
Yes, and they're all doing the dance and oh God, I watched that religiously. That is like a moment that just in theater that just I love so much. So
I gotta find that bootleg.
It's an amazing show.
Slime tutorial.
I'm not a crybaby. I'm just an empathetic person.
Of course.
Okay.
Proudly. And so I cry at anything and everything. Like a show ending is enough to make me cry. But I think a show that never fails to make me cry is Falsettos. I mean,
oh yeah, there's like six different points in that show.
Right. It's just so makes me cry. And also just, I think it's one of the best shows. It's one of my favorite shows. And some of my favorite music.
Another show that made me cry was Emily Dickinson.
Okay.
Sue's Apology, which is a song. I'm sorry. All right, I don't want to keep plugging this show, but this show is our baby. But Sue's Apology is the end, and Tegan and JT wrote the most beautiful song ever. It is on SoundCloud. It is one of the few songs that we have released on SoundCloud. And this song, first of all, had everyone in the audience crying. But I can't not cry when I listen to this song because it is such a beautiful, queer, women-loving women song about like regretting the choices that you've made and regretting hiding who you are and regretting not loving the people that you want to love at a moment that it's too late. Yeah. And it just, that song, just the orchestrations and the lyrics, it just, it makes me sob like a baby. And I didn't write this song, so I'm not being like, oh, this song that I wrote.
I think McKenna's like blocking and choreography was also so fucking beautiful. Like just everything about the number was beautiful.
Yeah. Aww.
Makes me cry too. Your pulse, I could feel it from a mile away. I wish I could forget about that look on your face. I had to settle for eyes that sparkled like a spitting image, since I can't have yours. But I'd never take a moment back. I know I'm still struck by the passion in your gaze, and I'm so moved by your touch. It seems fate's decided for us, and I've run out of luck. But I know I'll never run out of hope for us. Oh, say you'll forgive me until you do yours like a drum.
Okay, well, I think we kind of went over this, but what is the single greatest experience in theater you've ever had?
This could be as an audience member, as
on stage, off stage.
A single greatest moment of your entire life at the theater.
Well, honestly, I can share one recently. I was in a production of Cabaret at my school, and I was playing Texas, who's one of the Kit Kat girls. You know, but I was understudying Fraulein Schneider, who is the old woman, and it's a part I would have never, you know, felt I was right for in like any sense of the word, any sense of it. I don't know. And I wasn't expecting to go on like at all, like not even at all. But then the second week of shows happened, and the actress had to call out, and she let me know a couple hours before, and I was like, oh, okay.
Here we go.
And I've been an understudy before, but I've like never gone on. I've maybe gone on in like a rehearsal, but I've like never gone on stage. And so that was just like the coolest, craziest experience of my life, because I was running lines like crazy, and I was like reviewing blocking. And then when I got to the theater, and everyone's calling me like, are you sure you're going to, is it going to be okay? Are you going to be, and I'm like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'll be, it's fine. And then I get to the theater, and it was the most like theater experience I've ever had in my freaking life. And I thought I would get like a put in, but I didn't really get a put in. I got to go up and do like one of the scenes, but then they were like, you have to go. We need to open the house. So I was like, oh. Because they were filling in like two different swings, because there was an onstage swing that was able to fill in some of the numbers of Texas, but then there was the actually assistant director who came on and did like some of the other
numbers. Glad you didn't have to do both. That would have been like a chaotic.
No, and it was crazy. And I'm standing there in the dressing room, like reviewing lines and reviewing things, and the music director's there singing with me while people are putting costumes on me and trying on shoes, and then someone's doing my hair, and then someone's like fixing a mic and doing a new mic. And I was just like, whoa, it just like was the craziest experience of my life. And then I went on stage and it felt so great and cool. And I would say that like the best.
Yeah, that sounds like an essential kind of whirlwind experience as an actor.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to like experience that, because it is just like unlike anything else.
Probably for me was going to see Cambodian rock band at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I've never laughed so.
What was that?
A Cambodian rock band. It's about the Khmer Rouge, I think it is, that regime that happened in Cambodia. And it is a play with the music of Dengue Fever, and they're going to do it at Berkeley Rep coming up. Ooh. And I'm so excited to see it. The script is so smart, and it was so educational, but it was just like so smart and twists and turns. I've never laughed so hard or cried so much in the span of an hour, like in my entire life. And I was literally on the edge of my seat, and the direction was beautiful and the music was so good. And just that is really like a theatrical experience. I'm so glad that I got to witness that. And what was it that we just saw in Oregon? Revenge Song, that one too. I'm just so glad that I got to witness theater, non-Broadway commercial theater, mm-hmm. At Oregon Shakes.
The Oregon Shakespeare Festival is a magical experience. Like, I've only been once, but it was a game changer. Like,
yeah,
I saw like Into the Woods in this huge outdoor theater. It was magical. And like, I saw like all this like gender flipped Shakespeare production. Like it's like innovative and exciting and in really fun ways.
Yeah, it's great.
Love. It's like what New York wants to think they're doing, but they're not. Like it's, I feel like Oregon is doing the progressive work that like needs to be done everywhere, mm-hmm. is what I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast, Tegan and McKenna.
Yes, that's so fun to have you guys.
Thank you.
We can't wait to see Jinx. That's going to be coming up soon.
Yeah.
What are the dates and for that show and anything else you want to, you know, promote and plug?
I think it's March. Wait.
While she's getting the dates, I'll plug Emily Dickinson's on SoundCloud, some of the music. Hopefully we'll be releasing more music soon. I have a web series called Theatrics Online. We still have yet to release the final episode of season 2, and that's going to be coming up soon. Finally wrapping that up. So if you like comedy and you like web series, that's a good thing.
And that started in the middle of the pandemic.
Yes. Yeah. Just a funny show about kids in school. And then Jinx is going to be, Tegan, do you have those dates?
Jinx is going to be March 3rd through 5th at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center.
Go see
and, it. Also follow my Instagram, I guess, Tegan Janae, because I also post a lot of music that I write on there sometimes. And that's definitely a part of what I do, and like website coming soon.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got all these links in the podcast description. We'll put it up there.
Yeah, and I'm also going to be in a 54 Below show coming
up. Oh, hey.
I'll be posting a link for that. I think there's going to be either a live stream or some videos or something. So that'll be fun.
Well, congratulations.
And stay tuned for all of that. And thank you for listening to our podcast.
That's right. Tell your friends.
Just yell out into the world, hey, everyone, listen to the Theater World podcast. You know, post us. Do whatever you want. Honestly, do whatever you want, okay? Wow. All right. Well, we'll see you next time on the Theater World podcast. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.